Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, March 23rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. While there are many, the primary tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years, almost 18 years now, to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download absolutely free the actual worksheet process itself. You don't even need to be put on a mailing list. Just click the link, download the PDF file, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to the App Store of your choice and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And when you do that, you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often, because that frequently leads to comments or questions or testimonials or answers or even refutations of the work, and we welcome all of those. If you're listening live and have any of those to offer, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and push 1, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code and turn on your microphone. We can have a discussion. If you're listening in the archives and have questions or comments or testimonials or answers or refutations, you can email us. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And or you can email Jeannie Rice at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And we hope you do that, because that makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. That intention is to be of service. And we're doing what we can to put on this internet show and talk about things that might be of service and be here on a regular basis to support people who want to learn about and use these tools. And if something has come up in your life that you wonder, could these tools be of use to me here, or I'm really stuck and don't know how to apply that tool, that's a great call. In the absence of those, we do our best to try and discuss these various tools and how they might be used. One of the tools that we're focusing on this year is the Way of Mastery. And I talk about the Way of Mastery as being a kinder, gentler version of the Course in Miracles. That's just how it strikes me. It's almost identical message, and yet it's written in a very different style. And yet it has some very useful exercises in it to help me question, challenge the conditioning of my mind and my culture and question my observations and actually approach life differently moment to moment when I do it with the practiced use of these exercises. And I was, I will direct you to yesterday's show for, an example of that. And a discussion of how something came up. A text message came onto my phone yesterday morning, and I threw a negative interpretation on it, and I used all these tools to great effect to challenge the interpretation and to challenge all the negative emotions I was generating. And that's our encouragement for this work, is to look at it as a set of tools. And we've been through the first five lessons of the Way of Mastery, each of them at least twice, and we've begun a little bit of work on the sixth lesson. And I just had somebody come in the chat room and ask, do we have a link to the website with the PDF versions of Way of Mastery? I don't know about the PDF versions, but you might try christmind.info, which is a place where you can go and read and listen to The Way of Mastery and A Course in Miracles. And it's quite a nice website because it actually has the text that, as it's reading it, it scrolls the text. So I'm just typing a little note in the chat room to that effect, and then we'll get back to lesson six in the Way of Mastery. And please just try and hold in your awareness that what is being discussed in this work, in this book, is actually a set of tools. One tool, the general tool is questioning. Understanding how little I truly know and being willing to put myself in that space of questioning, learning to live from the question. And other tools come up from time to time in these lessons as suggested exercises. And please understand that this is not an intellectual exercise. This is a part of the mind, the intellect, is just a tool like a screwdriver or a hammer. It isn't useful for a lot of things. It's useful for a few specific applications. So I want to pick up my intellect and use it, and then I want to put it down and learn to tap into and see the benefits of another. And there are probably several different ways of feeling, experiencing, intuiting, connecting to the energies in my life and in the world around me that are not simply my intellectual, my conscious logical, my assessment, my evaluation, my judgment, my reading of numbers, my weighing of objects and measuring objects. That's the intellect. And somebody was asking a question last night in the support group that just it was amazing how many layers of intellectual rationalization and judging and questioning we have. And they said, so is this carbon-based memory that we talk about in the reality management worksheet, is that the same as ego? And my answer was a very quick no. That's not the same as ego. Because in the reality management worksheet where it says carbon-based memory, as Michael Rice talks about that, he's talking about the actual physical chemical brain in our skulls, which literally just functions like a computer hard drive. And the wisdom of that is already contained in the first four or five lessons of Way of Mastery, where it says your intellect can only be a repository for all the trivialities that have been crammed into it. And it can only spit back out those same trivialities. So, you know, be careful when you go to try and manifest something, because unless you get clear about the fact that you're not just a body and you're not just the intellect and you're not just the ego, then if you don't get clear about that, then all you can manifest is what you've been programmed by your culture to want to manifest. So the carbon-based memory is just this recording and playback device, like the hard drive of a computer. What people call ego is this constellation of thoughts about themselves and who they are and how they should react to the world and how the world should treat them, etc. And it's not the same as the hard drive that holds that information. But that's just another level of I'm churning through stuff. It's like a cow chewing its cud over and over and over again because it's got to mash it down and make it tinier and tinier bits so that it can digest it well, or for the human mind, so the human mind with its 9-bit capacity can understand something, to make it really simple. And the world is far more complex than that. So please understand what we're going for and how these lessons become a tool is when I put the intellectual mind aside and I move into an experiential space. I move into questioning, I move into meditation, I move into mindfulness, I move into prayer, I move into asking to be shown. All of these just words for a state that's different than the analytical state of mind. So we're on page 72 in the Way of Mastery in Lesson 6, and it says, therefore, if you would truly know about this energy of creation that some call love, you must learn to know yourself at deeper and deeper levels. The text reads, therefore, if you would know love, know yourself. Embrace the truth about it, and the truth will set you free. Then, indeed, love will flow through you, like the great sunlight that comes to nurture this beloved earth. The love that flows through you will be unimpeded. It will not meet a single obstacle. You will look upon whomever is in front of you, and you will know that they are part of the flow of creation. They are sent unto you from the flow of creation, from the Father, Mother, from the Godhead, from all that is. The Holy Spirit has guided them to you because through you, love can be given in a way that begins to touch the place of their awakening. We're all connected. The law of resonance is always operating. If I hold energies of bitterness and resentment and hurt and judgment and competition, I'm going to resonate those same energies in other people around me. When I hold energies of conscious awareness of what Dr. Michael Rice likes to call total, perfect, conscious, active, present love. Total, perfect, conscious, active, present love, present in the moment, consciously aware of my true nature as love in this moment. When I hold that energy and pour my mind energy in, when I hold that specific vibration and pour more of my mind energy into it, it strengthens it and it's going to resonate it even more strongly in the people around me. The text continues, that is why you are but a servant of love. You are the conduit for this energy. That is all that this life is the expression of the creative energy. The text continues, when you choose to surrender, to give up the game, to give up the dream of trying to resist the capital T truth that is true about you always, which is you remain as the Creator created you to be. When you give that up, you will become a mere channel, a mere conduit. You will become no more a seeker, for you will decide and have decided to have found your purpose. When you have surrendered the last vestige of an insane possibility of contracting away from the truth of life, when you've given that up, then this energy of creation, love, will flow through you. But notice, please, that in order for it to flow through you, it must first flow to you. Therefore, seek always to receive in order to give. For what can you give another if you have not yet received it into yourself? How many of you have been taught to try to love, to try to do the right thing, the good thing? Yet how many times have you gone within your secret chamber and said, oh, I'm just not worthy? And then you wonder why your attempts to join in love with others never seem to be quite fulfilling enough. They never quite seem to fill the cup. They never quite seem to elicit the joy that you believe could be there. Right. This is why all of the really good deep spiritual traditions have exercises in them for learning to receive as well as give. I remember in graduate school we had this experiential weekend where we had to go and with the other students go to a place where they had a pool and go into the pool and do these exercises where we would allow people to send us loving energy, support us while we floated there, give us a foot massage, whatever, give us positive affirmations. And they did this just so we could get in touch with all the parts of us that were uncomfortable receiving. Receiving affirmation, receiving physical touch, receiving comfort, receiving support, receiving guidance for deep relaxation. All the deep spiritual traditions know what is written in the reality management worksheet at the bottom of it. In the last step, it says, look, there is a law of the universe that says, I can't give away anything that I haven't first possessed. Right? So I need to accept my true nature as love. I need to let it resonate deeply through me. I need to let myself feel the truth that is true always, that I remain as the Creator created me to be, before I can share that with someone else. Michael Rice likes to talk about, you know, imagine you've got three or four tractor trailers loaded with life experiences from your traumatic childhood. Maybe there was alcohol abuse. Maybe there was wartime violence in your grandparents, and then they were constricted in their ability to give physical affection to your parents, and then your parents were relatively, you know, noncommittal with you for physical expression. And and you've got a divorce in your family of origin, or you've got a lot of yelling and screaming, or you've got, constant affairs, even if your parents stayed together, but there was yelling and screaming in the house. And you come out of this, and you go to some Disney movies, and you read some novels about love, and you think, oh, I want this perfect kind of loving relationship. But what you're taking with you into that relationship is all this baggage and all these histories of watching aunts and uncles and grandparents and parents in these unsatisfactory relationships that people call marriage and love. But really, there's a lot of abuse. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of cold shoulder and silent treatment and name-calling and swearing and cheating on each other. And that's my history, and I'm bringing that with me into an interaction with somebody else, saying what I really want with this other person is true love and fidelity and respect and compassion. But what I bring in is trauma. And because we know about the law of resonance, whatever I'm bringing in with me energetically in my mind, etc., it's there to be resonated. It's going to get resonated every time I choose an interpretation of something. It's going to be resonated every time anybody that I'm interacting with chooses something that I think is similar to what my uncle always did to my aunt or what my dad always did to my mom, etc. And then this response, this auto response in me is going to bubble up unseen by me and spill out into my relationship and cause a disruption, and I'm going to think it's my partner who's doing it because he or she is not showing up in my life the way I think I know they should in order to be a loving partner. And so, you know, I've got this little chest that I carry with me. It's, it's like 8.5 by 11, maybe it's 3 or 4 notebooks full of what I think a relationship should be. It's the notes I took at the Disney movies, and it's the notes I took from classes on relationship when I was getting my psychology degree. And that's this maybe, 4 or 5 inches thick, 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. And that's there to be resonated, but there's also these 3 or 4 tractor trailer loads of material of trauma that I carry with me into the relationship to get resonated. Which do you think is going to get resonated more often? Which do you think is going to feed more of the interpretations, the templates for interpreting and responding to life? It's clear that the traumas, the dramas, the life I lived for, the first few years of life, maybe 7 or 8 years of life, where I was basically in a hypnotic state downloading stuff that even my parents didn't understand that I was watching and downloading. So if I'm hoping to get a nice pattern of interaction and a healthy relationship going, I need to understand that I have to do the work to unload the baggage. And I got distracted there because somebody's asking, I've called in on my phone, is something I need to raise my hand? Yes, press 1 on your phone, and that'll put an icon of your hand by the phone number, and I can announce you by your area code. Again, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. And here's someone with a hand up. Welcome. What's your first name? Give us a name and where are you calling from?
Yeah. Hi, my name's Derek, and I'm calling from Michigan.
All right, Derek, how can we support you today? What's your question or comment?
I've been following you guys for a while. I'm actually a student with Michelle. And I recently started just 15 hours ago, I started the 7-day mental diet. And So it's kind of actually hard for me to talk about this because I'm trying not to. I'm talking about it, I guess, retrospectively because I'm above it right now at this moment. So I make music. I have for 3 or 4 years now, and in for the past year or two, I was in a captivity prison, I guess, of extreme judgment and I guess self harassment. And also like comparisons to my favorite creators and artists and always measuring myself, coming up short and beating myself up about it. And it made it so basically I just haven't been able to create anything for years that I'm satisfied with or happy with. And all I want to do is channel the universe and be and let the universe speak through me while I'm creating things and put it out there and be happy with the products and the things that I create. And I've just now in this, the 15 hours I've been doing the mental diet or so, I feel like this burning at the top of my mind because I'm just constantly diligently focusing on the thoughts and letting the negative ones wash off me and quickly just replacing or putting my mind straight forward. And I kind of feel this actual feeling in the front of my brain from how much I'm focusing, even though I know it's not my using my analytical or logical mind, and it's more so like intuitive. And it's actually a really nice feeling these past 15 hours. I've been studying this. I've been loosely studying you guys and this stuff for years, but I've never really tried this hard to practice it. So I'm hoping
So let me interrupt you and ask you what you mean by the mental diet.
Oh, it's the 7-day mental diet is a challenge from Emmett Fox. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Oh, it's a 7-day mental diet. Basically, the idea is you just have 7 days of complete not dwelling on a single negative thought. So if a negative thought pops in, then you use your practice and your work to move past it as quickly, to let it go, release it as quickly, to breathe through it as quickly as possible.
Okay. And you've been doing that for 15 hours?
Yeah.
Is that what you were saying?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And you also said that you are familiar with this work. You've been following it for quite some time. So does that mean that you know what the reality management worksheet is and you've done some of those?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And are you incorporating that with this mental diet so that if you have a negative thought that keeps coming up, you do a worksheet on it?
Yes.
Okay. So what's the question or comment I might support you with?
Well, I guess I was wondering if you had any advice on on my creativity, my constant self-judgment when it comes to creating music and moving past that and being able to create as freely as I possibly can, because I'm in this critical thought loop where I'm constantly putting myself down and it's completely limiting my creativity and my output. So maybe thoughts on freeing yourself up.
Well, the whole thing is that everything we teach is all about that, right? So the reality management worksheet, EFT tapping, this mental diet that you're bringing up from Emmett Fox, all of these can be useful things. This whole practice of the way of mastery, all of that can be put together into your own version of what I'm going to talk about as this two-prong approach. The two-prong approach is, number one, I remember that, as the way of mastery would say it, what is true always. That is, you remain as your creator created you to be, that you are the extension of the creative energy and form. So you bring some mind energy to reminding yourself of that. That's one prong of the approach. The other prong of the approach is that when something less than that comes up in your awareness, when you have a negative thought about yourself or you're judging yourself as not being valuable or not being creative enough, then you use a tool, you take 100% responsibility for that thought arising in your energy field. You take that calming breath, you hold it at the top and you slow the exhale down so you get the physical body relaxing, and then you apply a tool like the EFT tapping or Ho'oponopono or Byron Katie's work or the reality management worksheet or any, you know, the Diedrich Wolzak's Choose Again worksheet, any of those where you actively work to help yourself understand if it's a negative thought about yourself or somebody else. You can instantly know three things. Number one, it's a lie or based in a falsehood. Number two, it's an old tape playing. It's not about what's going on in your present life in this moment. And number three, if you let yourself pour more thought energy into it or take an action from it, you're just going to make your life situation worse, not better. And so it's this active pursuit of that two-prong approach. And in the second prong of that approach, you can use any and all of these tools that resonate with you, that feel good for you.
Yeah, I have noticed that this is exactly the type of teachings that I'm looking to practice when I'm doing my research and things like that. And it's been, I'm constantly running into reminders of how much of a, how much value this can be to me. Do you have any specific thoughts on envy or jealousy of other people, and any small tidbits about overcoming envy and jealousy?
Well, so here's a thought you have, that you're envious, right? That you wish you were as good as they are, or something like that. You can put that thought on the worksheet, and the latest one of the more recent versions of the reality management worksheet, you can put that thought on the worksheet in number 1D, where it says, the truth is only my thoughts cause me to feel my emotions. And if you keep having this recurring thought that says, your work is not as good as so-and-so's, or so-and-so's work is better than yours, you can begin by putting that thought on the worksheet in 1D, and then back up and say, okay, the more I think that this person is much more creative and her work is much better than mine, what's the emotion I feel? And just breathe and notice what emotion you feel, and then you're back up to 1B in the worksheet, and you say, the emotion I'm feeling is, and you fill that in, and then you start working through the worksheet. And that will actively take whatever's coming up for you in the moment and let you use that as your roadmap to how to dismantle it.
Yeah, it's helpful to be walked through the worksheet like that, because sometimes I need a reminder on how to use it.
Well, if you need a reminder on how to use the worksheet, there are a host of audio files available that Jeannie Rice has archived out at whyagain.org. Go to the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner. And when you get to that next page, there's a link that says MP3 files. And they're specifically listed shows like this where people have called in and been stepped through the entire worksheet process. And so over and over again, you can listen to a variety of people, a variety of issues. Some where they knew exactly what they wanted to work on, some where they didn't know what they wanted to work on. And as you listen to those shows, it's like a tutorial. It's like your own personal study guide for getting better and better at using the worksheet in various circumstances.
Okay. Yeah, I'll reference that in the future.
And then specifically for your situation, when you have a negative thought about yourself or somebody else, one of the more powerful tools I've ever encountered is this reality management worksheet. It's powerful, effective, efficient, and it's accessible. It's absolutely free. You can either get it on the app on your phone, or you can download it for free from the Why Again website. And then just start filling in. Okay, here's my thought. I'll never be good enough. Here's my thought. This person is so much more creative than me. All right, when I have that thought, what's the emotion I feel? I feel anger, or I feel sadness, or I feel confusion, or I feel completely burned out and overwhelmed. So So that could be three different emotions or four different emotions that I choose from that same thought and step through the worksheet. And each time I do, I'll come up with a slightly different goal. And every goal that I come up with and then cancel will energetically link me to another part of my mind that's holding some negativity that I need to release. And that's how this process can be so powerful in effectively unloading my baggage, my negative baggage.
Great stuff, yeah. So,
we had somebody on the support group last night, and this is a person in her 60s, and she was doing something because the trigger is all of the chaos and insanity in the world today, and her upset level on a scale of 0 to 10, where 10 is the most upset you could get, her emotion was sadness, and her upset level was 12 out of 10. She was off the charts, deeply sad and tearful. And she started working through the worksheet, and when she figured out the goal she had and canceled it and did the little meditative, you know, the forgiveness pattern that we have people do in the support group, when she went through that, at the end of it, she was down to a level, I forget what it was, but it was greatly reduced, like a 3 or a 4 or something. And what she discovered was that all of this upset that she was feeling was tied to memory she has of being 2 years old. She's in her 60s. So here's this in life, in the moment proof that the upset she thought she was feeling because of what's going on in the world today and the news and the politics and that's not what's causing her upset. What's causing her upset is stuff she's carried around with her that she's had in her energy system since she was 2 years old. And as she softens and breathes into that, now she understands, oh, this is all an inside job, and she gets it at a deeper level. And that's just one little example of the power of these tools. It's not something you're going to figure out with your conscious logical mind. It's something you've got to put the conscious logical mind aside and apply a tool and ask to be shown. You've got to go into that space of understanding. The more I learn, the more I realize about how little I can truly know, and that my best position to be in is in the position of student, always being a student, always asking to be shown.
Speaking of student, I think I was listening to some of your radio show recently, and you touched on some guidance for meditation for somebody who's new to meditating or doesn't currently meditate. And I can't find that information again. I was wondering if you had any short guidance tips for someone looking to start meditating.
Well, the best thing that I ever came across when I'd spent years of doing all of these programmed meditations and none of them worked and I kept getting frustrated was a thing from Ram Dass where he said, set aside a period of time where you get to choose. You want to meditate for 10 minutes, 15, 20, 30 minutes, doesn't matter. But you choose how long you're going to meditate for. And this was back when we had actual phones with cords hanging on the wall. And he said, put the phone in a drawer, take it off the ringer, make sure that you don't have to answer the door if somebody comes. And you make an appointment with yourself. You say, 2 hours from now, if I think of something that needs me to get really emotional and upset, I'll do that in 2 hours. But for the next half an hour when I'm meditating, I'm going to make a deal with myself that any thought that comes into my mind is perfectly okay. And then I just get a comfortable chair or I lay in a comfortable place on the bed and I breathe softly. Maybe I start with a couple deep breaths, but then I just decide that for the next half an hour, 20 minutes, whatever it's going to be, I'm going to use my ability to focus my mind gently and rotate between three focuses of attention. The first one is I'm just going to watch my breathing. I'm not going to try and breathe in a certain way. I'm not going to breathe into a 4 count or out to a 4 count or hold to a 4. I'm just going to watch what my body does with my breathing. And I might do that for a while. And then I'll gently shift the focus over to scanning my body from the top of my head down to my toes to notice what I notice. Physical sensations of tingling or warmth or numbness or, boy, I can't really tell where my hand is right now. Just notice. Feeling heavy or feeling light from the top of my head down to my toes. And the third focus of attention that I just gently move back and forth between these three for the whole 20 minutes or half an hour, the third focus of attention is just to watch whatever thought arises. And when I used to do it, I'm left-handed, so I would imagine these thoughts coming in from the left side of my head, and would come in, and I would just think, oh, here's a thought about how I forgot to take out the garbage. And I would just let it sit there, and I would mentally imagine one of those little cartoon bubbles, like a cloud bubble forming around it, and then that thought floating off. And then I would kind of think about turning my eyes to the left to see what would come in next. So I just gently watch with complete acceptance any thought that comes into my mind. Oh, here's a thought that this is a stupid exercise and I'll never learn to meditate. Okay, I let that be there, and then I imagine it floating off and see what thought comes next. Maybe the same negative thought comes for the whole half an hour. But because I've sat back and I made this contract with myself that I'm not going to pour any negative emotional energy into it, I just let it be there and let it float off and see what happens. If it comes again, I go, oh, there's that thought again. And then I think, oh, you know what? I haven't watched my breathing for a while. So I gently shift the focus of my energy over to my breathing. And I just pay attention to, oh, I just seem to be breathing rather shallowly and rapidly. That's interesting. And then maybe another thought comes in. Maybe that means you're not getting relaxed. Oh, that's interesting. Let that thought be there and let it float off. So this whole 20-minute period, all I'm doing is gently shifting the focus of my awareness between observing my breathing, scanning the body and noticing the sensations, and watching the thoughts arise and let them float away. That's where I recommend people who really want to start meditating begin their work, because they will probably experience a deeper feeling of relaxation doing that than any other meditation they can begin with.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome and deserving. Is there something else we can help you with?
I had one more thing. I was listening to you probably 2 years ago or a year ago, and there was, I think, I'm pretty sure it was you, and instead of Michael, Dr. Michael. And one thing you said has stuck with me for the entire time since then, and it's kind of at the forefront of my mind. And I don't exactly know the origins of it that you said, and I'm wondering if maybe you do, and you had more thoughts on it, and it was the thought that you said, I think you were responding to somebody about something, I think a caller, and you said that you have the time to achieve all your, everything you want to achieve. And it sort of seemed to me like a counter to that impending pressure that we have as humans to feel like we don't have enough time and it's too late to meet our goals or to achieve what we want to achieve.
Okay, so the thing that's getting resonated for me is the idea that Dr. Michael Rice has a tool that he calls the Mind Shifter tool. And I call it targeted journaling because I'm, you know, trained as a psychologist, and people have done all kinds of targeted journaling for a lot of years and known the benefits of it. And that's exactly what Michael is describing in his Mind Shifter tool. And he has a Mind Shifter tool that contains that phrase. Now, what is a Mind Shifter? A Mind Shifter is a statement that I write down that is probably going to stir up and resonate in me a bunch of negativity from my past. I might have negative thoughts or beliefs or traumatic energies around it. And I take some time. Michael used to say an hour. Now he's up to 3 or 4, 12 hours. You know, it just keeps growing. But I block out this period of time as though I'm going to, you know, commit it like I'm going to meditate. I'm not going to let something distract me from this for a half an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is. And I write, I get some blank sheets of paper, and I write my mind shifter on the left side of the paper, and then I draw a line down maybe halfway through or a third of the way towards from the left margin to the right margin. And I write the mind shifter on the left, and then I sit there and let myself respond to it. And, you know, he's got a list of 39 mind shifters, and they're broken into 3 categories. And the way he suggests that people do that is you pick a number from 1 to 3, and then you pick a number from 1 to 13, and you just ask to be intuitively guided in the number that you pick. And so, you know, one of those that resonates is, I am love, and I have all the wisdom, time, money, and energy needed to accomplish all my aspirations. Now, is that how you feel about your life? If you ask most human beings, they would say, no, I never have enough time. I don't have enough money. I'm not creative enough. I'm being held back by my, you know, my station in life or whatever. So if I write that on the left side of the sheet of paper, instantly all of these, no, that's not right, I don't have that, are going to come flooding up. And I just start writing them on the right side of the sheet of paper. And I let it flow. And maybe I write 2 or 3 lines, maybe I write 2 or 3 pages of all of this stuff that that's not true, I don't have all the time and the money and the energy to do, to accomplish my aspirations. And I remember how hard it was for me to get my homework done, and other kids would be outside playing, and I would be doing homework for 4 hours, and then it'd be dark, and I still wouldn't be done, and I'd get in trouble at school the next day. I just write all that stuff until I go dry, and my mind seems to dry up, and then I take a breath, and then I rewrite the statement. I am love, and I have all the wisdom, time, money, and energy needed to accomplish all of my aspirations. And then maybe I don't have anything else to write. So I take a breath and see what wants to come up, and then I rewrite it again. I am love, and I have all the wisdom, time, money, energy, and needed to accomplish all my aspirations. Eventually, in the course of that period of time, whether I give myself a half an hour or an hour or 3 hours, eventually stuff is going to get stirred up in my unconscious and spill out on those pages that I would not find if I sat and thought, why is it that I don't feel I have enough time? My conscious logical mind can't get access to that stuff, and yet it will flow out if I commit to an exercise like this mind shifter tool and the targeted journaling that it provides. So that's what got stirred up for me when you asked the question. I don't know if that's on target, but that's what I would direct you to.
So that does sound like the origin of what I was looking for. Yes, it does.
So you can go to wyattkin.org and click on the page that says start here on it, and then, you know, the mind shifter tool is available when you click on the thing that says other worksheets. You just kind of scroll down, and, you know, what I was just reading was what I got to when I clicked on the thing that says other worksheets, commitments, posters,
so
et cetera.
The question isn't solely just for an exercise, right? I mean, we do legitimately have enough time and money and all of that. We're supposed to feel that way, correct?
Well, it's not about what I'm supposed to feel, right? It's about what am I carrying that generates my feelings. And the more I can become aware through an exercise like this of what I'm carrying and hiding in my energy system, and it's false and doesn't belong there, or it's connected to other false energies and traumas that I can get rid of, then the more I get free of it, the more I put it down and walk away from it. That's the goal. This isn't a science. This isn't a philosophical debate about do you actually have time to do everything you want. We're not into that philosophical debate. We're into a very practical set of tools that will help me discover what am I holding in my mind, in the traumas of my past, in my beliefs, in my negative thought patterns that I've inherited from my family and the generations. What am I carrying around with me that's holding me back from living to a higher level of fulfillment and potential and expression of this creative energy that some call love in each new present moment? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that's helpful. So I think I'll
take that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to. I've gotten a lot of information during the call, so I'm going to spend some time taking some notes and reflecting on it.
All right. Well, I thank you for the call and the questions. And if we can be of service again in the future, let us know. And again, there are all these tools that Michael and Jeannie offer on whyagain.org as specific tools, and there's the tool of the Way of Mastery that we've been reading about since January 10th. And there are those files and summary files. Last Friday was a summary of the first five lessons, and that might be of value to go back and listen to that if you're trying to step in and get caught up on what we're doing with the Way of Mastery as a set of tools.
Yeah, that would be a good one for me. Yeah, I thank you for your time, Dr. Tim.
You're entirely welcome and deserving. Thank you for the call. I'll mute you so you can listen, and I will pick up where we left off with the Way of Mastery. We're talking about in Lesson 6, basically we got a little sidebar talking about how the point that they're making here on page 72 in the Way of Mastery Lesson 6 is what's woven into Michael and Jeannie's worksheet on Lesson 7, that a principle of the universe is that in order to give something away, I have to have possession of it. The way it's stated in the worksheet is, a principle of the universe is that by giving, I first get the original. And here the Way of Mastery is saying, notice that if it love, this loving energy, flows through you, it must first flow to you. Therefore, seek always to receive in order to give. For what can you give to another if you have not yet received it to yourself? How many of you have been taught to try to love, to try to do the right thing, the good thing? And yet, how many times have you gone within in your secret chamber and said, oh boy, I'm just unworthy. And then you wonder why your attempts to join in love with others never seem to be quite fulfilling enough, never quite seem to fill the cup, never quite seem to elicit the joy that you believe could be there. I have said unto you many times that the greatest of gifts you can give is this, to come wholly, completely to the recognition that every attempt you have made to resist being the presence of Christ, every attempt you've made has failed you miserably. No matter how many times you have tried to convince yourself that you are unworthy, yet does the universe find a way to love you, to be the loving energy expressing through you. No matter how many times you've tried to lock yourself into the space and volume of a body, you have not succeeded. And at death, you have remembered and been confronted with the radiance of your unlimitedness. Therefore, the greatest of gifts you can give another is to be one who has rescinded the need to to insist on the insanity of fear. So that's a line that I probably read dozens of times before moving on with lesson six. The greatest of gifts that you can give to another. Well, that's great. I'd like to give somebody a gift. And then what does it say? Is to be someone. My gift to the world is what I choose to be aware of as my true nature. That my gift is to be fully all that I can be. My gift is not, the greatest gift I give somebody is not a new Tesla car or a fabulous house or a pile of money. The greatest gift I can give another is to be someone who has rescinded the need to insist on the insanity of fear. There's so much in that line. Fear is a demon to be cast out. Fear not, fear not, fear not. It's all through the scriptures. Fear is an insanity. And the greatest gift I can give to another person is to be someone who stands in the present moment in this total, perfect, conscious, active presence of loving energy that I extend. I recognize that as my true nature. I recognize it as their true nature, and I extend it actively to them. The greatest of gifts you can give another is to be one who has seen through the insanity of fear, who has decided to stop insisting that fear is justifiable and needs to be in my mind and rationalized. The greatest gift I can give another is to be in the conscious, active, present awareness of my true nature as love and extend that love to them. That comes right back to what was happening in lesson four, where it said, listen, if somebody asks you who you are, don't give them some ego identity of your size and your weight and your bank account or your political beliefs or where you were born or where you live. Tell them the truth. Who am I? I am the extension of love in form. I've never been born, and I will never taste death. I am infinite and eternal. I am standing here in the present moment aware that I am the extension of love in form, like the sunbeam from the sun. I'm this energy of creation extending from the Creator. I am the effect of the Creator's love, and I stand before you to love you. And if I exist in the moment in what Dr. Michael Rice calls total, perfect, conscious, active, present love, I will be giving the best gift I can ever give another person. So that's where we'll drop our note for picking up again tomorrow. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Thank you. Enjoyed that.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thanks. Thank you. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday, March the 23rd, 2022. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we will give Michael just a minute to get dialed in. And Juno in the chat room, I'm not sure if you are the same as Derek, But if you still need to ask a question, press 1 on your phone. Then that raises a hand in the switchboard, and then I will announce you by your area code. I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org. And you can click on the Start Here button in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down and click the bullseye. Both of those will take you to the same place. And I'm trying to click at the same time that I'm trying to talk. My apologies. So when you go to that page, if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see some instructions about where to start if you're new to the work. Chapter 24 of Michael's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The link is on there, and that's where he walks the character in the book through doing a worksheet. There is a PowerPoint presentation that explains Aramaic forgiveness, and it's an awesome little presentation. Then there's the mini versions of the Reality Management Forgiveness Wake-Up Sheets. And then if you go down two more links, there's one that says Special Instructional MP3s on Wake-Up Sheets. And that was for Derek. That was what Dr. Tim was referring to, where you're going to find MP3s of special radio shows where we've actually walked people through doing the forgiveness worksheet. So put all those tools to work in your life. Then below that is all the other worksheets that we have for the other workshops. There's the commitments, the posters, the codependence. That's where you'll find the mind shifter list. All of those things are under other worksheets. And I'll put a link to that in the notes for today as well. You can also, if you're on the website, you can click on the right in the middle. There are 6 big buttons. One of them will take you to the book where you can read it online or you can download it in PDF. There is the Mindshifters Radio, and it explains different ways of accessing the radio show. And then over on the right-hand side, you'll find it's by year. So like if you see 2022 and you click that little arrow, then it'll drop down. You'll see January, February, and March. That's where you'll pick up all of the archived shows, and we continue adding those. And it goes all the way back to 2011 when we first started doing the Mindshifters radio show. So we've been doing this for a long time. We started on January the 31st, 2011, and go back through. And at the beginning, I wasn't keeping a lot of notes for every day. So if you listen to any of the archives that do not have notes listed, just drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And, send me a little summary of the radio show that you listened to. Tell me what date it was, and I'll put those notes out on the website. And we appreciate your support. Welcome, Michael.
Absolutely. We do appreciate your support. It's awesome to be able to do this show every day and to keep advancing the understanding for us individually and hopefully for you as listeners and participants. And we deeply, deeply appreciate your participation. You know, when you push one and you ask a question, you really choose the direction of the show and the direction of the information that we're going to follow up with. And oftentimes that opens new vistas, new studies, new places. And so we appreciate the participation of everyone involved. I had someone the other day who had picked up a copy of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And the book is out of print, but they found it on eBay. You know, there are dozens of copies usually available on eBay and Amazon, other used bookstores too, but those two in particular online. And this person was commenting on, gee, I've never seen a book with as many acknowledgments in it of people who've contributed to the book. And I'm not even sure how many names there are in the book. This goes back to 1995, and I think there's something in the range. I literally combed back through all of my notes on, you know, I keep records of who was participating and where things came from, and I went back through and literally created a list of, I think it's close to 400 or maybe even 500 people who were part of the development of that. I'm actually a little bit reticent in that if I do another book, if I have to do those acknowledgments, I don't know how I go back over the last 20 years and collect, or 25 years since that book was written, and collect the names of everyone who's contributed. There have just been so many people who've participated and who've, you know, come forward with a thought, a word, a question that really opened up a whole arena of understanding, even when people didn't know that they were making that contribution. So thank you to each and every one of you. You are appreciated. And the show kind of functions off of a monologue that I usually do, and then a dialogue that follows with questions moving forward. We're actually doing a one-year Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing program. Actually, I'm anticipating it's going to become just an ongoing process. And on Sunday, we did that Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing process, and the people who were involved were just marveling. I mean, I think this is our fourth session now, but they were marveling at how intimate the group had become and how expansive, how much learning was being done just by meeting once a month as a committed community. And there was some pretty sweet and deep appreciation for how, even with a small group, the energy was moving everyone in the group forward, the intimacy of the group and the material. You know, we start out with a process session before we go into the still point breathing, and so that has gone in all kinds of directions. And then tonight we'll actually do a second session from this month's session at 7 o'clock this evening. And the number of things being covered, the new discoveries that we're bringing forward, and everyone's process is just pretty amazing, pretty amazing. And yesterday, I read an article that I'm working on. I've done a little more work on it since, on alcohol, and just wondering if anyone else has any thoughts, if anything was stirred for you, any thing that you might have to add to that article that I shared yesterday. And if you weren't on the show, you can go back to the archives. Just go to our website, whyagain.org. And basically, I had written an article, or I'm writing an article, and it starts out as though it's an alien coming from the moon, and how shocked they are at how people have this special cabinet in their home. They keep this fluid in for celebration for their best friends and neighbors and loved ones and family. And then we go through the monumental amount of destruction done to families, to health, to lives on the planet as a result of alcohol. And, you know, as I've been writing this, I've just been paying more attention to just how many circles it seems like alcohol's just the norm. And looking closely at the statistics, looking closely at the results that alcohol produces, especially on television, and how this programs people, how it makes, you know, alcohol look so normal, and yet the family destruction, the family suffering, the number of deaths, and 3.3 million people a year globally die of alcohol-related causes, and 88,000 people a year in America. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Of course, they're the ones that are reported and that we know of. How many don't we know of where alcohol was involved? It's just, it's outrageous. I've had a couple of people call me since yesterday who reported their engagement in, or pardon me, their receipt of abuse as a result of alcohol that went totally unreported. And the reported statistics are outrageous, but I suspect that, you know, the actual statistics, like, say, for instance, of rapes, of attacks, of violent crime, of theft, probably double, triple, maybe even quadruple what's reported. And we really sit down. When you come from the mindset of a culture that makes it look normal, it's like, so what? But when you start really looking at its impact, it's like shocking that anyone would even tolerate the substance in their home. It's just, at least to me, it is shocking. Any event, if anyone has any thoughts, anything to share, any questions, any anecdotes or stories to share about that piece we did yesterday, I'd love to hear your voice. And beyond that, of course, we're looking to continuously clarify the fact that forgiveness, and I spend so much time and conversation on it, is not what our culture has taught us it is, and that groove has it surprises me that groove, that forgiveness is about how I'm going to let you or somebody else off the hook for what's moving inside of me, just how deeply that groove is in people's minds, and how people just accept it as, oh, well, you know, it's just normal. It's just, yes, of course I'm going to let you off the hook. And it seems like for so many people, no matter how often they hear it, they still think forgiveness is about how they're going to be forgiven by God, or they're going to forgive somebody else, or somebody else is going to forgive them, or they're going to forgive themselves. And kind of a new byline that I've come up with is forgive continuously, but never forgive anybody, including yourself, for anything, and never expect to be forgiven for anything, because forgiveness is not this, I'm going to let you off the hook, or you're going to let me off the hook for what I've done or what you've done. But rather, if you have a capacity for any form of pain, forgiveness is about how you reach inside yourself and remove the root of your pain. Remove the energetic pattern that has been resonated by whatever is going on in your life, whatever is going on in your world. And just how effective the system called denial is in tricking us, in literally constructing a world where, and a world that we believe is out there, when it really isn't, it's strictly within, it's strictly a construct of the mind, but structuring a world that shows us that somebody else is responsible for our pain. And that when one engages in forgiveness, the whole structure of that lie begins to crack and fall apart. Once that happens, the person who's in pain, it becomes very obvious to them how and what the energy, how they are and what the energies are that are being used to produce their pain and make the work of forgiveness, the removal of that energetic pattern that causes pain, so much more obvious. So that's, in essence, the central theme of what we are looking to make available on a global scale, literally to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And so your participation in that conversation is most appreciated, because we are not in this alone. It is a process that is collective, and the power of community to support the deeper levels of healing that are possible if one has the tools. And of course, one is willing to do the work. And the core of the work is, you know, the whole forgiveness process is about collapsing the constructs of our minds. Whenever there is hostility or fear, in any form of perceptual construct, that hostility or fear-based construct is the equivalent in computer terms of a blue screen. Now, you know that if you get a blue screen on your computer, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing constructive, nothing useful, nothing that can be accomplished with that computer. If we could get that point across to people, when they're in hostility or fear, are trying to change somebody or something out there and not realizing that they're working from a blue screen in their own mind. Blue screen means nothing gets accomplished. Of course, we live in a culture that's taught us well, but if you get even with somebody, if you get to punish somebody for what they've done, then you've accomplished some things. No, you haven't. All you've done is added to the vengeance file in your own mind when you punish somebody for something. When you delete punishment from your mind, there's no thought of, oh, I have to get even for this, just some benefit to punishing, there's some benefit to getting even, because there is none whatsoever. All that those energetic patterns can do is create more trauma and pain inside of the person who's experiencing the desire for those pathways of action. All it's doing is creating more trauma internally. But that truth is invisible as long as one comes from a culture where, well, punishment is normal, punishment is required, and there's some benefit to it. My offering would be, there's never been a benefit to punishing anyone for anything. Say, well, I know somebody who's, you know, did terrible things and they got punished for it, so they stopped. Well, you know, I can see that that might be a motivator for somebody to stop doing things. But if you look at the cost to the person who inflicted the punishment, you look at the cost or the damage done by the punishment on the person who was punished, and the net result is more trauma in the world. You know, if you remember that quote we've used more than once from Rumi, your pain will lead to more pain. It's all it can do until your eyes exhale love as naturally as your body yields its scent. What if in response to every quote-unquote offense that we experience, what our minds did was prompted us to go to a connected space of love and bring love present to that situation? Ah, now you're working from an actual functioning mind. And each thing that you face, instead of being energized by adding more negativity, more punishment, more grief, more pain, more rage, whatever, more fear, instead of adding more of that, if you were to continuously douse the circumstance with love, then the errant components of the circumstance internally and externally would begin to dissolve. Well, yeah, but what if I've got this person who's just so rageful? Well, if you've got a person that's rageful, what you're looking at, it's a person who's filled with tremendous amounts of pain. And the underlying being that is filled with that pain is no different than you or anyone else. We're all made of the same stuff called love. And there's that line in the worksheet that says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. You know, if I have a middle C tuning fork and it's perfectly still and I want it to move, but I can't hit it with anything, I forgot another way to move it. What am I going to do? I'm going to take a second middle C tuning fork. I'm going to hit it on a desk and get it vibrating really strongly and put it near that first tuning fork that's standing still. Does a tuning fork that's standing still have any way to refuse to move in response to the proximity of a second middle C tuning fork that's vibrating strongly? It has no choice. There's no other option, because energetic field is governed by a law called the law of resonance. It comes to up for me to we were out doing some things. We had some of Ari Rain's cousins visit yesterday, and one of them is about just a little bit younger than she is. It was really sweet to watch them hang out, holding hands, walking down the hallway of the care facility that Dad's in. But afterward, when we dropped them off, and I had gone to do something, and I came back to the car, Jeannie, maybe you'd share what Arya Rain at 3.5 shared with you. It was just like, talk about melting my heart. And I just watched this little girl as she just adds love to the world. Just go ahead, sweetie.
She had, she loves babies. And when her cousins came, one of her cousins was 6 months younger than her. So that they actually looked like twins running around. But they also had a baby that's only 3 months old. And Aria at first went straight to the baby and was like, oh, baby. And she wanted to see him and touch him and everything. And then her and her cousin that was her age, they played the rest of the time. And so when we got in the car, Michael had to go back in to get something. And so we were sitting there and Aria says, I love Papa so much, but if he were little, a little Papaw, I could love him so much more. I mean, it was just, or something to that effect. It was just so sweet. So I guess she wanted
sure
you
was.
To be that
right
baby.
Yeah, sure was. Of course, she shared that to me. It's like, she wanted me to be a little baby so that she could pour more love in my direction. It's like, hey, it doesn't get better than that. And so
we do have a hand up.
Oh, great. I was just going to say she's training us to pour more love into the space as we're training her to do the same. And it's just a wonderful reciprocal happening. So let's talk to whoever's got a hand up. Let's say hello.
Okay. I believe it's Miss Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, welcome, young lady.
Two little girls with their hands being held in the hallway there of the facility where your dad is, Jeannie. That was adorable. On Facebook,
yeah,
that was the. I mean, they had met when my brother died and at the grave, but they were both just like 1 year old, and so this was almost like a first time seeing each other, and they immediately just hung on to each other, hugged each other, kissed each other, you know, ate popcorn together. I mean, it was just really sweet watching them play. And
that's so cute.
But, yeah. So welcome.
So, thanks.
And a good report. A good report on Dad. You know, we talked about we're giving him this MCT powder oil and coconut oil. And we're seeing each day more. I mean, it's only been, 6 days now, sweetie? But I think 6 days, 7 days. But each day we're seeing more signs of his cognition becoming stronger and his relationship of his brain functioning with his body becoming better. So just to let you know about that, it's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
It is. So what's exciting in your world, young lady?
Oh, a lot of stuff. We had our Zoom group today, and one of us, we were working on Power Person, and she said, you know, to have the Power Person be the same person that isn't a Power Person, sometimes, most of the time, but then turns into
right.
a power person. She said that was confusing to her, and so for a little while we did a little bit of brainstorming. We didn't come up with anything, but I wondered if you ever came up with anything. It's a little late, and we can all get it. You know, it's not a big deal. It's easy to understand once it's explained that the power person is only that part of the person, or it's that person when they are not in love. they are not acting out of love. So she understood it, and we worked from there. And then she said a second thing. She said, you know, the Christian church has turned Jesus Christ into a power person in many respects. And I thought that was an amazing thought.
I would agree that the place is... Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you go ahead. You probably could put it better than
I. Well, I was just going to say the places where they've put words in his mouth that are based in something other than love. That's exactly what's happened.
Right. Anyway, our group is good, and this woman happens to be Tim's younger sister, who lives in Santa Fe, and she calls in, and she's just great. And you had met her.
Sweet.
She met you years ago, yeah. But she's doing the work, and boy, her mind just exploded with the power person idea. She said, can it be somebody other than a parent? And I said, sure, it can be anybody who you feel strongly connected to in a way that you are triggered strongly if something negative happens. It could, you know, even a little kid could probably function as a power person. I hope that's right. But she said, yeah, she understood that. So anyway, we went from there, and that's just a little report of your work spreading around again.
Had she met us when we were out in Santa Fe?
I don't know where she met you, and it was years ago, and you know how it is. She said at the time she just was in a different mode of self-discovery, and it didn't resonate with her, but the work is resonating now, and she keeps coming on the group, and she's doing the worksheets. And,
oh, cool. Did you record today's session?
No, I've never recorded it. I could, I suppose, but it's mostly... You know, who's going to go through those things? I don't know.
Well, for me, if you would record it, I would love to have heard the discussion part on the power person, because, you know, someone else's perspective can always triggers and, oh, yeah, that's great. I hadn't thought of that before, and opens another piece of it. So that's kind of part of how I keep advancing, you know, by keeping a listening ear to everybody's conversation. People clue me into things that I had never considered and never thought about.
Yeah.
You know, that discussion we had last week about the power person was all as a result of interaction with people that I'd been working with that awakened, there's another piece.
Yeah. Whoa. Well, I wanted to, changing the subject drastically, I wanted to ask you about Dr. Laurence, I think you said his name was, saying that Tinnitus was God loving, speaking lovingly or something. Tell me more about that, because I have tinnitus. I'd love to think of it that way.
Well, you know, he had a challenge with it, and he was doing some inner work, and that was something that he had just come across as a thought. Now, I don't know if, you know, it was kind of something that he sort of spontaneously shared with me. And I don't know if that would still be his thinking or not, having done some work around it. But that was, you know, he had just shared it kind of spur of the moment when that opened for him.
Well, it's a very happy and useful thought. Mine is pretty mild. I don't even notice it most of the time, but when I play the piano, I notice it. It's as if the sounds of the piano resonate something in the ears and make it worse. And it's also true in other situations like singing or something. Actually, singing covers it. So if I'm listening to music, it's apt to be more pronounced. It's not a terrible thing. I live with it pretty well, but I love the idea because if I do notice it, I can remember that God is with me and speaking to me always, you know, if I've forgotten, which I forget a lot. So I liked the idea of making something positive out of it.
Well, it would be nice to, if you just continue paying attention and give me feedback, which I will offer to John, and I'll have another conversation with him. Next time I talk to him, I'll ask him about it and just, you know, how he's thinking about that, if thoughts move forward any further for him or insight.
Right. Okay. One of them, the more important one. Oh, yeah. You had sent me a very interesting video, and I don't know whether you want to talk about this on the radio show, except that other people with insomnia might be interested. Is it okay, or should I just email you?
Go for it. Sure, of course. Absolutely.
Right away, I went to the drugstore, and I got two things. I got that mouth guard thing. I boiled it. I put it in my mouth. I shaped it to my mouth, and I wore it to bed. And it was horrible. And the thing is, it actually, Tim has a mouth device. He has bad snoring and sleep apnea. He has that device. But what it is, it's two parts, one for the lower jaw, one for the upper. And it's rigged so that the lower jaw is forced to jut out, opening the airways. If you're lying down on your back, you could understand what I mean. It opens
right.
the airways. He no longer snores, and he sleeps wonderfully. But, of course, he's taking meds that help him sleep, so it's hard to know which is, how much of each one it is. But
sure.
I thought, oh, this might be an answer. I asked him if I snore. He says, sometimes I have a soft buzz, and maybe that's all you need to have sleep apnea. This thing, all it did was weight my mouth in a certain way so that my jaw fell backwards even more and closed my throat even more, so I knew I was on the wrong track with that thing. Although a device like his, these nose strips too, which open your nasal passages, but that isn't the issue
right.
either. And so, you know, I just wanted to report that somehow there wasn't enough information there. I think the guy is onto something, certainly for sleep apnea and insomnia. He's onto something, but it didn't. I really put in a good effort, Michael, but it didn't work. So I'm reporting.
Was it a dentist that set up Tim's device?
It was a special. Yeah, basically, it was somebody who creates these devices, and they're not cheap either. But
right,
you know, I could look into that. But I don't.
Perhaps it'd be worth a consult. You know, to show him what you did and just ask the question, you know, and maybe what you've got, maybe the way it was shaped. I know that, you know, the ones that are done for yourself, there's a certain amount of, I think, hit and miss, because if you don't, once you heat it and it's pliable plastic, it forms. If it doesn't form just the right way, then, and it sounds like perhaps yours didn't, then it's supposed to reverse the jaw or bring the jaw forward rather than push it back, which sounds like what it did with you. But it might be worth
well,
a
anyway.
Consult.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I should do that. Basically, it's just these different cycles. I'll wake up 2 hours and be absolutely wide awake, and then I do tapping and I do my stuff, or I get up or whatever. And if I'm lucky, I can get back to sleep in an hour, and then another 2 hour cycle and I'm up again. So we go to bed pretty early, but by 3:34, I'm up for good. And then I take a little nap during the day, and I have good energy, great energy in the morning. So when this guy talked about people being tired and sleepy all day, I'm not, I have really good energy.
It wasn't your thing.
So my, huh?
It wasn't your thing to be that fatigued.
No. And my GP says, look, you know, you're older, you need less sleep. A lot of people need less sleep. And he said, if your energy is good during the day, this may be just the way it is for you, and it's no problem. And it's mostly just, you know, what do you do with yourself in the middle of the night? I guess you can do a lot of things, but anyway, I just thought I would report because it was a very interesting TED Talk you sent, and I appreciate it.
Right.
So,
cool. Well, I wish it had been the answer.
Oh, it would have been great. Let me
to take it to the next level.
Yeah, but having a consult is a good idea. I even thought of having a sleep test, but I can't imagine being able to go to sleep in a situation like that. You know, at
right.
all. I don't think we get a very accurate read. So, anyway, that's pretty much the reports. Jacob, middle grandson, forgot to fulfill his prescription for an antipsychosis drug, which they put him on after this terrible episode with LSD. And
right.
Suddenly he is back. It's like Jacob reappeared again, the more talkative, friendly boy. He had been completely drugged up on this med. But we're kind of nervous because he absolutely cold turkeyed off of it, and we're hoping that's safe to do. He doesn't have a doctor who's working with him. It's very hard to get a doctor to work carefully to get you off meds. Usually they want to increase them or change them, and even my daughter is dubious about getting him off stuff. So being a
How long has he been out of it?
It's been 3 days now that he's not been on it, and I haven't gotten any bad news yet, and I hope I won't. He may be fine, but she's nervous that it'll have a backlash because going cold turkey off some meds is not safe.
Yeah, it's really, definitely needs professional.
Down.
So he doesn't have access to the physician that prescribed it to him?
Well, he was out in California at this rehab place. My daughter says he does, and he's not enterprising about it. You'd think he'd get on the phone and just find somebody and have a discussion. And she's working full time, so it's very hard for her to kind of be mother hen all the time. And he's 21, so anyway, I'm airing a lot of dirty laundry here, Michael, and it's probably not so great for the radio show, but there's always somebody who's out there doing the same thing, I suppose, and might be interested. But
well, and
I'm
the
not.
Truth is we are all in this together, and you're educating us, and who knows when, you know, any one of us might think, oh, well, it doesn't mean anything now, but who knows, a point clicks in when we happen to walk into somebody's space and that piece of information just given us saved somebody's life. You know, I mean, I'm willing for that to happen. So certainly hold him in the space, and I'm not familiar with the drug he was on, or just, you know, if it is one that's safe to go cold turkey, but most psychotropic meds I think really do need professional support to get loose from.
Right, that's true. Thank you for listening to all that. That was four different things to put on the table there, but it's nice to have you guys to talk to about all these things.
Well, we appreciate you putting things on the table with us and for us. You've opened so many doors over the years to some wonderful conversations and that have impacted a lot of lives. So you are deeply appreciated. And, you know, the way you approach the world and your work is also deeply appreciated.
Thanks, Michael. You know, there's a very fun thing happening at our refugee center. We've got a lot of more people from Afghanistan coming in. And I wish you could be a fly on the wall just for a little while, because you would never believe the amount of laughter you hear in there. And it's because people are learning words and making mistakes that are very funny. And it happens all the time. So I'm thinking, I should go to a foreign country and try to learn the language, because it would be such a joke, you know, the fun things they say. But I'm thinking of the healing factor of laughter, and the fact that these people can laugh so raucously. And one new woman came in from Sudan, brand new. What did she do? She hands out hand-carved keychains for each of us in there. Here's
really?
People coming here and handing out, they're giving us gifts. Just really touching.
I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago we talked about a film out there called The Lost Boys of the Sudan. Did you ever watch that film?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That's
years
powerful,
ago,
isn't
I
it?
Could watch it again. Yeah. Yep.
The thing that impressed me was how, first of all, what horrific traumas these boys had been through, and yet how just totally free of vengeance and vile temper and such they were was just amazing.
true. And it makes you wonder about their whole culture, whether it has a more loving, basic culture than maybe ours does at this point.
Well, another thought that comes up in that context is, you'll probably remember sharing this, but I don't know whether this particular point came, or the point I'm going to make came across or not, but back probably, I'm not even sure now, maybe 9 or 10 years ago, we were out west, and we were going up the coast of California and up into Washington State, and we were, I think it was to do a week of presentations. Actually, it was a two-week presentation we were doing in Seattle, and we had a 3 or 4 day intermission there, and we got a note from a student who we'd known for years, said, you know, my teacher wants to meet you. And this man was a Buddhist teacher who had a retreat center, I forget what town it was in now, but south of Seattle, south of Portland. And he was considered in the Buddhist tradition to be the verified reincarnation of the Buddha of wisdom. Just the sweetest,
wow.
Just wonderful man. And the student, not knowing we were in the area, wrote to us and said, you know, my teacher wants to meet you. He was sick and was at a healing center, and they had some of your videos, and he went through his healing process, but he wouldn't leave until he had watched all of your videos, and he wants to meet you. So it turned out when we got that email, we were about 3 hours away, and we had a 2 or 3 day hole in our schedule, which when we were traveling like that was pretty rare. And so we went and visited, and you know, we were introduced to him, walked him through the forgiveness process, and then he asked if we would teach it to his students, which we did. And the second time that we taught it, he said, you know, when we have nothing like this forgiveness, we have none of this technology in our Tibetan teaching. And his take was, and it kind of ties in when I think about that movie, The Lost Boys of Sedan, he said, when we were in Tibet, we had no need for that. It just wasn't necessary in our culture. But he said, now that we're here in America with what's going on here, this is so precious, and the forgiveness process. And so I think it is a difference in culture that he was referring to, similar to what the shows in that movie, The Lost Boys of the Sudan, that they're just not taught the it's not a cultural thing, the hatred, the vengeance, that sort of thing. And but he could affirm that how necessary it was now that they were coming into a place with the amount of vile energy that there was in America.
Whoa.
You know, the way they were treated
so
as immigrants and all that sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm. Wow.
I think I might go back and watch that one, too. It's been several years. It was a powerful film.
Tim's sister was saying that she thought our very culture acted as a power person at times. And you're saying the same thing.
That makes perfect sense, yes. It's like it's set up to brainwash us into a particular mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, historically...
Critical.
Yes.
Critical of ourselves, I mean, yeah.
I know there's several films that I've watched over the years. One of them was, there's a really interesting... what's his name? He's a film producer, Burns. Not remembering his first name, but he does a lot
Jerry?
Of historical. Say it again.
Jerry, but not Jerry. Doesn't do
no.
historical.
No, all right, Jerry. Might be John Burns. Anyway, he does a lot of historical films. He did a Civil War series. He did a series on the national parks in America, which is really an awesome series. And, you know, the mindset that wants to take, that wants to own, that is vile and violent and vicious and really doesn't care who is harmed or what is destroyed as long as they're making a buck. that was one series that, to me, that mindset became very apparent. If you look at what it took to give us our national parks, the squabbles and the fights and the political viciousness that went on trying to turn the national parks into commercial enterprises.
Wow.
It's
Ken
one
Burns.
Of those. Ken Burns. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
the
yeah.
National parks. It's, yeah. It's maybe a 6 or 7 part series. It's awesome to watch. I mean, he really displays the beauty of the national parks, the features. It's like doing a tour of the national parks. But that mindset came through to me very powerfully. There's another series on horses, and I don't remember who did it, but in America, how often horses have been thought of as wild horses, as a nuisance animal, and the desire to capture, turn them into money, same mindset. And that's the mindset that I see missing in that movie, The Lost Boys of Sudan, that I heard from, his name is Kempo, or they call him Kempo, which means professor or teacher, that was this Buddhist teacher. And I suspect that the opposite mindset is the one that Yeshua was referring to, because there was that viciousness back in his day when he said what's most important in the law is Rachma, to have this mindset rather than the other. And today, rearing its ugly, vicious, vile, you know, defrauding head at every turn in order to, you know, make a buck, it's showing up in the political realm. And I was talking to someone yesterday, day before yesterday, and he had been involved in, he was not for any particular party, but he was involved in a group that was doing support for putting on events for a particular candidate. And, you know, he was just a volunteer, and he was sharing that he'd gotten connected with one of the leaders, one of the people who was creating these huge events for a particular political persuasion, which I will not mention, but it fits in with that mindset we were talking about. And he was looking at their ticket prices and all of that, and he made a comment about, wow, the millions and millions and millions of dollars being made to this guy who was one of the head organizers, and they threw him out. They banned him from ever entering one of their events again, because it was just an offhanded conversation with, for him, realizing how much money was involved. And I mean, they literally banned him because he brought that up to one of their leaders, how many millions of dollars were being made from it.
Whoa. Here you go.
Just interesting to have the brain cells to recognize some of the signals of how the world is being scammed in so many ways.
Terrible. I know. Scary.
Definitely wake up call all around.
Right. Well, thank you, Michael. I'll get off so somebody else can call in. Thanks for all the
input. We appreciate you. Tell Tim we said hello and send our love.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. Yeah.
Okay. Hey. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep.
Well, Miss Jeannie, it looks like we've got about 10 or 11 minutes left. So do we have anybody else up there in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room?
No, it's all quiet. Actually, the chat room, one of the people who told me Ken Burns' his name, so thank you very much.
Thank you for that.
And another person gave, this is from Dr. Tim's, they were talking about meditation, and so they gave a link and asked if you were familiar with Emmett Fox's 7-Day Mental Diet. They see a lot
I'm
of
familiar with
similarities.
Emmett Fox, but I'm, yeah, I'm familiar with Emmett Fox, but I'm not familiar with his program or whatever it is, a 7-day mental diet. He's one of the originals. He's one of the old timers.
Yeah, he says this was written in the 1950s, and he gave a link to a PDF for the Mind Shift, the 7-day mental diet. So I'll
it's
put that link
It's actually called Mind Shift?
Mind Shift, the 7-day mental diet. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so,
how about sending me a copy?
I'll put that link out there, too. I will.
Yeah, cool.
So thank you very much, everybody in the chat room, for participating.
Cool. Something else, Janie, I don't know that you've mentioned yet, but tomorrow night, Thursday, we're going to be doing, there's a book study club that comes out of London, England, and perhaps you can put the link in such, and it'll be a Zoom link that'll be at 3:30 on the 24th and the 31st. So tomorrow,
I actually have that
24th.
Information on the website, so I'll put the link to that because it has both the it's Global Book Club that's called
Hear My Voice.
Book Club.
Hear My Voice Book Club.
And they had Michael and I were on the one that they did back on March the 10th or March the 3rd, and they had such an outpouring with it that they asked Michael to come back and actually go over the worksheet on the first meeting, which will be tomorrow night, the 24th. So he'll actually be going through the worksheet. And then on the 31st, then they wanted to open for question and answers too. So the Zoom link is out there, and so come and be a part of it. It was exciting last time. There were people from over, and actually it was pretty cool because they broke out into some small groups, and I wasn't real sure how that was going to work. And so I clicked one of the rooms, and there was a young lady out there from my mind's gone blank now where she was from, but it was like Ireland or somewhere. And she had a little baby in her arms, and Aria was sitting beside of me. And so it was like this instant connection to somebody on the other side of the globe. And Aria really enjoyed being part of that, too. And then we got a globe out, and I showed her where they were. But all of that information's out there, so come be a part of it. I mean, this is going global. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a book club in London, England. It's at 8:30 in the evening their time, which is 5 hours different. That's still correct that it's 5 hours now that we've shifted to daylight, or is it?
You know, I just now thought of that. I don't know. Let me check and see if they have changed time.
I'll be right back
to you on that.
Yeah. Okay. And while Jean's checking on that, if you have difficulty getting to the Zoom link, which she'll post, you can just open the Zoom program, and the meeting ID is 974-4442-4565. So Zoom meeting, 8:30 p.m. tomorrow, and on the 31st, and it'll be an ongoing thing. We'll keep announcing it. The meeting ID is 974-4442-4565. So you can just put that into the Zoom program app, and you can access the meeting. And the passcode for the meeting is 54321. That's an easy one. 54321 is the passcode for that meeting for tomorrow night and the 31st. And I believe it's a recurring, ongoing meeting, so it'll be relatively permanent.
We need to double check with her because I found two different answers to that. When I just did a Google search, it said that there's 5 hours difference between London and New York. But then when I said, what time is it there now? It's only 4 hours ahead of us. So it looks like...
Yeah, and it is four. I just went to a converter. It is just 4 hours now. It was 5 hours before we shifted to daylight savings, so it is 4 hours. So it will be 4:30
our time
instead of 3:30.
So I need to change
our
that
time
on the website.
Yep. Yes. I'm glad we brought that up. Yeah, in the link, they've actually got a link to what the time difference is, and so it is 4 hours different instead of 5 now. So right now it is 6 o'clock in London, England, or 5 minutes to 6. Cool. So that'll be in the notes if you need it.
And her book club, it's not just reading the book. In fact, she makes the point of it doesn't matter if you've read the book yet or not, that it's more of, it's almost like a workshop. So it's not like you're just sitting with a bunch of people reading through the book. It's actually like a workshop going through using the tools.
Yeah, this is something this lady's been doing for years, is doing book clubs. And it was kind of nice because she shared with us that she's never been touched by a book. The reason she's doing this as part of a book study club is because the doing the forgiveness work has touched her pretty deeply. And she said, you know, with all the other authors they've done books for, she's never approached one and asked them to come on and be part of the book club. So I was honored that she connected with us, and we did have, I mean, the session was, I think, supposed to run 2 hours, the last one that we did, and it ended up, I mean, everybody was just there, and it went on for, I don't remember now, but an extra hour and a half.
I had to leave to take Aria home at 5 o'clock, and when I came back, it was about 6, and you were still going.
Yeah, it was a good, really good discussion group, and as you say, people from all over the world, so pretty cool. And if you haven't read the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again yet, as I said earlier, it's out of print. However, you can go to Amazon or to eBay, and there are always copies there. I don't even know how many tens of thousands of copies we sold back there at the turn of the century. Seems kind of strange to say that, but enough that there are still lots of inexpensive used copies. Because the book's
or you can go to our website and read it online or download it in a PDF.
Yeah, you can download a free PDF in any one of 8 or 9 different languages from the website. So if you just go to whyagain.org, there is a picture of the book. And if you click the book, that will take you right into a link that takes you to, do you want to download it in German or Russian? Or pardon me, yeah, German, Russian, Spanish, Swedish, Farsi, Danish, Thai. Part of it is in Thai. In any event, in English. So you're welcome to a free copy of it and take it and put it to work. And we have a newer version of the book available in our catalog. There's an audio recording of a newer version. That version was never published in a printed form, but we published it in an audio format. And so that's available on our catalog. You have another thought there, Jean?
No, I was just going to go over the books, but you pretty much hit the languages. Not all of them are complete. There's a couple of them that only have like chapter 24 or whatever, but there's many languages out there.
Yeah, cool. And we're down to the last minute or so I'm just going to say mucho gracias. Mucho gusto to everyone. Thank you for joining us. And create the best year ahead of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. It's a gift the world needs. It's a gift you can give. And blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org. mindshifters.org.